And I really prayed, like, I really believed that there was just going to be this, like, fairy tale reconciliation at the wedding where he would walk me down the aisle. And that was not it. He did not come to the wedding. And that was such a heartbreaking time for me.
He just quietly sat there. And then he called my mother, who then walked in. And it was horrific. It was horrific. It was so painful for them.
He actually gave me an ultimatum. And he said, okay, so he funded my life here in London. Mm-hmm. I was still in uni. I'm at the time maybe 20, 21. Mm-hmm. And I've got no funding or anything if not for him helping me be here. And he said, okay, so it's me and all of the things I do for you, or it's Jesus.
And I think sometimes you're both parents, aren't you? It takes becoming a parent makes you reflect even more intensely on your own upbringing, your own childhood. Yeah. And for you, obviously, it was laced with trauma for different reasons.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Magnified Conversations. My name's Rachel and I'll be your host today. As a team, we have been thrilled to put out this content on relationships, money, career and faith. And we know it's been a real benefit to our community so far. So if you're new here, welcome. The best thing you can do is subscribe to this YouTube channel so more women can benefit from all of this wisdom and value-adding content. But without further ado, let's get into this conversation. Okay, so ladies, we're going to be actually hearing quite a bit of your story today. And what happened when you found faith and how that impacted your family. So I'm really excited to hear about that. But it would be great if you introduce yourselves to everyone first.
Amazing.
Yeah?
Do you want to go first?
Sure. I'm Sahar. I am a marketer and I'm also a podcaster and mum.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Hello. I am Fadila. I am a mum and I also run a music and brand agency called Hail Sound Management.
Amazing. Nice and concise, ladies.
Yeah, thank you.
Now,
thank
we're going to start with a bit of an icebreaker.
Yeah.
Do you know what Desert Island Discs are?
No.
Okay, so I'm going to tell you. So it's, you have to choose one song, one book and one luxury.
Oof.
And you also have to say why you chose them. One song,
one song,
one book, one luxury.
Luxury.
One song, one book, one luxury. Okay.
And why?
And why? Do you have any?
Oh, gosh.
I mean, they're quite big questions.
I mean, I tend to do this to my guests and then I'm freezing now. Okay. I'll start with a book. The last one I read was called Disappointment with God by Philip Yancey. And I was actually reading it because we, like in my church, I'm very involved with a course we have called the Life Course, which is about introducing Jesus to people who are exploring faith. And so I read it so that I can just help understand people's questions and disappointments with God. But it blessed me so much because the book talks about all the questions that people have about faith that we're normally too afraid to ask because we don't know where they're going to lead us.
Mm.
And I just thought it was absolutely phenomenal, written in like 1992. I'm just discovering it now.
Yeah.
So love that book. I think you should go next while I think about
it. Okay. Yeah, we can mix it up. I'll go as well.
Okay, great. Okay. All right. So now, is this if I'm like on a desert island?
Yeah, I guess so.
Okay. Am I allowed to say the Bible?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I would love to bring the Bible because it keeps me sane.
Yeah,
literally. And yeah, it's just like fruit for my soul. So I would definitely bring my Bible. And what would you bring?
So my book, I mean, I know I'm asking you guys, I'm like, what would it be? If I really was pushed, I'd probably pick something from Maya Angelou.
Oh,
so just a
nice
classic literary work.
Okay.
I Know Where the Caged Bird Sings or something.
Nice.
Just because I've grown up loving books and reading literature. So I guess I would have to go for a classic. If it's a desert island.
Love that.
Yeah.
I have my song.
Yes.
It would be Dreams by Fleetwood Mac.
Yes.
I love that song. That is like it as a songwriter. I wish I wrote that song.
Really?
I just think it's
more
so,
than any other song.
I don't know what it is about it. I think because they were genuinely in the feelings of what they were writing about.
Mm.
You can proper tell
yeah.
in like the way they're singing it and the words they're saying. I love that song so
yeah.
much. Yeah.
I do, to be honest, but I was just interested in why.
Okay, so when it comes to songs, because I listen on Spotify and usually I'm driving, I have no idea what the name is
or what so the artist is. To me, then.
I will share the lyric.
Okay.
It's an Afrobeat song, and I feel like every time I listen to it, it just gives me the best vibes. It's the one that goes like, gosh, this is so embarrassing.
No, sing it.
Like, go. Baby girl, let me whisk you away. Whisk you
away. Oh, I don't know. Holiday. It sounds good.
Mozambique.
Oh, I don't let know. Me
if anybody knows that, hook a sister up.
She don't know.
I have no idea.
I really thought I'd be able to help you there, but no.
Sorry. We need to get a bit of like Shazam going so we can figure out what it is.
I'm sure people in the comments will be saying what it is.
Add it in the show notes, maybe.
I have no idea
who sings that, but
Do you know what? The one song is the cruelest question to me. I love music so much and listen to so many different genres. How can you pick one song?
I know.
But the first song that came to mind was the song with the first dance at mine and my husband's wedding, which was Let's Stay Together, Al Green.
Oh, stop. I love
that. So it's just a classic. I could listen to it over and over again. Yeah. That would be my song. And while we're on the subject, my luxury, if I really think about the luxury that I love in life, is just salted butter. But not just any kind of salted butter, like salt crystal butter.
Oh, okay.
Bougie butter. It's the only way,
salt crystal butter.
It changes the game on a good piece of bread.
It does, on toast.
Yeah.
Salted butter.
It's just a game changer. Out of everything for me, it's butter. That's where we are.
What is my luxury?
Oh, what is
Do you have one?
I'm gonna say going to the hairdressers because I went for the first time yesterday.
Oh, and got I love it. Yes, you did.
Got my hair done. So I'm gonna say getting my hair done.
Okay. I love that.
I'm hooked.
Yes.
Oh, what would mine be? I'm trying to think what I really love. Oh, do you know what? If I could bring a bike with me, that would be fantastic.
Do you love biking?
I genuinely love it so much. It feels so meditative to me. So I'd bring a bike and just cycle around the island, live my life. Yeah, that'd be the best.
There's no hairdressers on the island, though.
Well, you bring one with you.
You bring a personal hairdresser. Yeah.
Traveling is my other... I love traveling.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So a private jet? I don't know.
Yeah,
is that not
all about that with the hairdresser. And I'll bring your salted butter with me.
Yeah.
I can't believe I picked salted butter when these are the options available. I'm not changing my mind.
Don't change your mind. Own it.
Owning the salted butter. So, ladies, you've both got just incredible stories of how you actually found your own Christian faith. Mm. But I know that's been really complicated. And so it would be amazing just to hear just a bit about your formative years, like how you grew up, where you grew up, and like how faith and religion has played a part in that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great. Well, I am Fadila, as I've already said, and I grew up in Ireland, in Dublin, with my mum and my dad and my little sister. And we actually grew up in a Islamic family. My mum and dad got married back in Nigeria, and my mum was actually a Christian and from a Christian household. But because of where they lived in the north of Nigeria. Mm. She had two sisters and all the three of them married Muslims.
Okay.
My mum decided to convert so that actually for us, for their unborn children, so that they could kind of have them grow up in a what's that word? So they could grow up in one single religion.
Yes, of course.
Mm-hmm. Make it less complicated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that was always the plan. Mm-hmm. And when I was 6 or 7, my mom was actually meant to go to Hajj. So like a pilgrimage, an Islamic pilgrimage. And she had said to, she actually prayed and said, if something happens that I don't, there was two times. She said, if something happens that I don't end up going, I will give my life back to you, Jesus. And something happened and she didn't go. And then we were in Ireland in a place called Dingle. I don't know if anyone's ever been there, but it has a dolphin called Funky. And she
in
was like,
Ireland?
Yeah, in Ireland. It's so random.
There's a dolphin in Ireland?
Yeah, called Funky. It's so random.
Okay.
But anyways, my mom, we were in this random place called Dingle, and she said to herself, if I see Fungi today, I will give my
And he's a living dolphin that lives in the sea.
He is alive. Right. And you'll never guess what happened. We saw Fungi. So after, I think that was like when I was 6 or 7, she gave her life back to Jesus. And she kept it a secret.
Right, okay.
So she kept it a secret from my dad for, gosh, up to 10 years.
But you knew, though.
I knew. My mum used to tell me everything, so I knew. And her, like, her worship space was our drive to school. So she would play all of the gospel songs. And at the time, I was like, you know, I was
really
seven
young.
Or eight, really young. But I loved to sing. And she would always say, Fadila, you're going to use your voice for Jesus. And I'd be like, okay, well, I'm actually a Muslim. So you do your thing, I'll do mine. And she kept it a secret. When my dad found out when I was around, gosh, 16 or 17, their marriage actually started breaking down. It wasn't what he'd kind of wanted. When I moved to London for uni, he actually decided to divorce her.
Right.
Islamically, because of their faith and just not seeing eye to eye on that. And then when I went to uni, I met a lot of incredible people, but I actually started, I don't know, as a lot of people do, just went down the wrong path in uni and really was searching for something, searching for my identity, searching for truth and... ended up actually being invited to a church and went there for the first time. I think that was 14, 15 years ago, and I never left. I walked in that door, sat by myself, actually thought that I had to pay into church because I had no clue. And gave my life to Jesus and never left. Wow. Yeah.
What That's was amazing. It that, like, touched that part of you that made you want to give your life?
I think for me, all through growing up, I always felt like I had to live two lives. So I would live my life. Like, my dad wasn't very strict at the time when it came to, like, me wearing a headscarf or anything like that. But then on a Friday and a Saturday, we would be in the mosque with our headscarves. And it was like there were two different lives that I was living. Right. And when I walked into that space, when the Holy Spirit just spoke to me, I felt like, oh my, I can be myself.
Right.
I am like, I am me and I am accepted just the way I am. And I don't have to hide who I am. I don't have to hide what I did yesterday. I don't have to worry about my future. I can just be. And that's what's kept me going for all these years.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Sahar, tell us a bit of, because we're going to like dig deeper into the story and kind of like what's been the outcome of that. Of course, your dad is Muslim, so like what, and knowing what happened with your mom, that played out. Yeah. So, what about you? What about your early years and upbringing and family life?
It's not as fun as Fungi, the dolphin. I love that so much, so much.
Also, what a name though!
I know,
so random.
So I was born and raised in the Emirates, so I was there, grew up, I'm number five out of five siblings, both mom and dad. And I grew up in Abu Dhabi, which was like the perfect place to have a childhood. Like, it was warm, it was an island, school was great. And we had such a beautiful childhood and a really strong sense of community. So even though I was born in the Emirates, my parents are from Sudan, so I'm ethnically Sudanese. And so we had a very tight-knit Sudanese community, which is where I felt, you know, that's where we felt seen and celebrated, because unfortunately there was also a lot of racism growing up there, being Sudanese, being Black Arab, and what it was a very complex identity to sort of carry with you in your childhood. So grew up Muslim, similar to you, Fadila. Our parents were, it was very much a cultural identity being Muslim. My parents did have faith. They raised us to have faith, but they never forced me or my siblings, my sisters, to like cover our hair. They always felt like, when you get older, you'll wise up, settle down, and you'll do the right thing. But we had that sense of freedom. But they were strict. But in the fuller context of what strict means in Islam, we were somewhere in the middle. Yeah. Like, we were pretty good. We're not like the strictest. So, so I grew up there. And then when I was 17, I moved here to London to study university. And it was during university where... you know, again, very similar to Fadila, I think I really lived a double life. So I came here and I was like, finally, freedom. Yeah. I can do me. Yeah. And I discovered the partying yeah. scene and everything that goes, that comes with it. And so I was had a very wild first year. I don't know how I passed, but I did by the grace of God. And by the second year, I had started like trying alcohol mm-hmm. and, you know, growing
and
up.
And that just wasn't obviously anything that you'd done before though, right?
No. Mm-hmm. And that was like such a big no-no. Like mm-hmm. once you drink, like there's no going back mm-hmm. sort of thing. And also as a woman, that was just something you don't do. And like if people found out your reputation, your like there was mm-hmm. just so many consequences.
There's a lot of shame.
A lot right. of shame. Right. A lot of shame. And so you grow up with this sense of because there's so many public rules of adherence when it comes to the faith. And because it's also a cultural identity that's mm. placed on you. It's yeah. I never chose mm. to be Muslim. I was born into it. And so the natural response is that you conform. Yeah. And if you have questions, if you want to try stuff out, mm. you have to live a double life. Mm. You because you can't mm. just be yourself. And so my family finds out about my drinking and I was almost shipped back home because my father, I remember, said to me, I would rather have a daughter with morals than an education.
Wow.
And I had one of my siblings who stood up for me and were like, let's just give her another chance. Mm. So I was kind of like under house arrest where I just went to uni, came back, wasn't allowed to go out, wasn't allowed to party. Like that was it. And so that put me in an existential crisis because I started like the guilt and the shame that I felt like I really let my family down. So I'm gonna, you know, so I just basically started, okay, let me fix up. And I started praying again, read the whole Quran from start to finish, started praying again. And by the end of it, I actually felt worse because I felt like the law and the rules were too heavy. I just knew that I cannot in my own strength possibly tick all the boxes. I just can't. I have this tendency to screw things up that I can't get rid of. And so like fast forward, I was having a chat with a friend of mine from uni and we're just talking about like Christianity and Islam. Mm. And so I remember when we were talking, she had a Bible on her shelf. I remember I said, you know, I'm really curious. Could I just borrow it? And it's like one of those little red ones with, I think, the Psalms and the Gospels. Mm-hmm. And she was like, yeah, sure. So during like my commute from home to uni, I started reading the Gospels on the train. And that was it. I started reading it. And at the time, I didn't know, but it felt like the book was alive. And I felt like I was meeting with someone. And I would just start sobbing uncontrollably on the train as I read the word. And I encountered the person of Jesus. And one of the story that completely shook me to my core, and I thought that was the most radical thing I ever heard, was the story of the woman who was caught in adultery. Mm. And how Jesus sees her, and you know, a lot of people know the story. People want to stone her to death. In my culture, like maybe not in the cities, but in rural areas, that's still a thing. Like if you're caught in adultery, like off with your head vibes, right? Mm. So, and to see that God himself saw that woman and he said to everyone else, whoever hasn't sinned, let him be the first to cast a stone. And he lets her go and he says, go sin no more. And for me, the idea that God can forgive something like that and love someone to that extent shook me to my core because I grew up in a society where I always felt like a second-class citizen as a woman. Mm. Rules were different for me. Like I was caught drinking and the consequences were so dire. But then for my male counterparts, there's no consequences, you know? If someone gets pregnant, it's the woman, not the guy. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's things like that culturally that to see God in that light, I just knew whatever this looks like, I'm going to follow Jesus. Mm. I need Jesus because I can't do this. Mm. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. What was like, was there a point, because obviously then, so you were in London then, yep. Your family was still in the Emirates or not at that point, were they back in London?
So we're like all over the place. I had a family member here, but my parents were in the Emirates still. Yeah.
So did you tell them at that time? Was that like, what was the story around that?
So there's a lot happened in between, but I didn't tell them immediately. This was, by the time I made the decision, it was the beginning, towards the end of my second year, beginning of my third year. Mm. Pardon. So I waited for a year and I just had this feeling of, I need to tell them as soon as I graduate. Mm. Because if I tell them now, it's going to disrupt everything. So I'm like, let me give them the thing that every African Arab parent wants, which is, here is the, I've graduated, here's the diploma. And then, so, I told them the day after I graduated. Wow. Yeah, told my parents.
Wow. Yeah. How did that go?
One of the worst days of my life.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit?
Yeah. So I remember that night. So to set the scene before telling them, I knew that I was going to tell them about the decision that I've made. But in the lead up to it, the Lord actually gave me a few dreams where I saw what was going to happen. One of them was I saw myself running around London with a backpack and I was just crying. Mm-hmm. And then I had another dream where my mother was so angry with me, what she had said to me, she's like, "You've stabbed me in the stomach." That's what she said. And after those dreams, like during that season of my life as well, like the Lord was so kind. He just spoke so clearly to me and just took care of me in such a profound way. I just knew I need to take my passport out of the house. I need to pack because I don't know if I'm gonna, like, I might be kicked out. Or I might need to run away. I'm not sure. And so I got things ready. And now during this time, my then boyfriend, now husband, was in on this. Right. So he knew what was going to happen. So when the family was sleeping, I would then like sneak things at night. He would go grab them, take them to his house. Because we were just ready, like whatever, like anything can happen. I know, of course, my family was not going to harm me, but I just knew that I might not be allowed to stay here. I'm not sure what was going to happen. So I prepared in that sense and made sure the passport was out of the house. And that night, like, I couldn't sleep. My throat was so dry because I was so afraid. And it was just after the graduation and my parents took me and my friends out for a meal. And they wake up the next morning and I remember I saw my father first and I just told him, "Dad, I've got some hard news to share with you. So I need you to sit down." Mm. And he was like, "Okay." So I told him, I've made the decision to become a Christian and I don't want to go back home. I want to stay here and live in London so I can practice my faith freely. Because the expectation was that once I graduated, I would move back. Mm-hmm. My mom had hooked me up with a job and like my life was waiting for me out there, a different life. And he just quietly sat there and then he called my mother, who then walked in. And it was horrific. It was horrific. It was so painful for them. And I think I've only seen my father cry twice. Both of them have passed away now. I saw him cry at my mother's passing. And the other time I saw him cry was that day.
Wow.
Yeah, I've never seen him cry before.
How did that make you feel?
Awful. Mm. Awful. Mm. Like I still get emotional thinking about it. It was really, really hard. And I remember then other family members came in and everybody, it was like, it's almost like someone had died.
Yeah.
That's how.
Mm.
And that's how hard it was. And over the next few days, people, not my family, was like, I watched the shock and the pain then turn into anger.
Mm.
And, you know, it's like we were going through all the stages of grief.
Mm.
And I remember as I sat there, I had this moment where I just felt like I was watching things in slow motion, and I just had this thought, which I knew was God, and it was a verse from the Bible that said the light came and the darkness could not comprehend it. And I was like, this is what's happening. And so then I told them I wanted to go to church. Because I told them on a weekend, Sunday came, and I was like, I just need a minute to come out and just get a breather. I wanted to go to church. Made the mistake of saying, I'm just going to go to church. Like, because now I'm like, I can finally. And also, like, I felt like I am finally myself with you guys. I'm not, like, living a double life.
Yeah.
I am truly coming to you. So for me, that there was a sense of relief of I don't have to pretend anymore. As hard and as awful as it is, I can be myself. And I said, I want to go to church. Did not go down well.
Mm.
And so at that point, that's when I had to escape. And I left. Had to, like, jump out a window.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, really? That whole thing. Run. Like, the funny part is that someone saw me, like, kind of looking outside the bathroom window trying to, like,
because that was the situation.
Yeah, I was just out of the situation. They were like, what's she doing? And then, like, 5 minutes later, they see me legging it with my house slippers.
Oh, my goodness.
Same time. It was funny, but not funny also. Which then led up, and then lots of other stuff happened. But I just left at that moment because I just need to get out.
Yeah.
Because I can't hear the voice of God right now, which is what has been keeping me going, because I'm in so much anxiety and I couldn't eat. I broke out in hives from the stress. Like, it was bad, yeah.
That's huge. And we'll come back to that. But Fadila, what about you then? So I can see you're getting, like, teary, because I know your story also, although so unique, like, is so similar.
So similar. You know, when you said you were going to wait until you could give them the best thing, which is, like, you graduating.
Yeah.
Mine was the second best thing you can give African parents, which is marriage. So I was like, right, I'm just not going to tell them until I get married.
Right, right.
So I'm not going to tell my dad until I get married. So that was always
my plan.
And what
was, like, the time frame between?
So at this point, I got saved when I was 19. And I was like, do you know what? As long as it takes, Lord, I'm not telling them. Like, I need to give them something. That was my plan. And I'd stuck to that I was just going to be honest, like, you know, God definitely saved me from living a double life, because I was planning on just keeping on going.
Yeah.
Pretending to him that I was exactly what he wanted me to be, do exactly what he wanted me to do. Mm. I remember even having a prayer mat in my university, like, dorm room, like, nicely laid for him. Like, just so fake.
I did that.
You know?
Yeah, and it's just prayer mat thing.
Yeah. And it's just not okay. And actually not the life God wanted for me. So actually I was exposed. So my sister, who's 4 years younger than me, she came to London to visit me and actually met Jesus for herself. When she did, she decided to get baptized. Mm. And when she was baptized, she was given a journal. And she journaled about her experience of baptism and how I had taken her to be baptized and all of the things. And my dad found the journal. So he found the journal, and he was in so much shock. And because in our family, I'm the people pleaser.
Right.
I do everything to the book. I don't disappoint him. Mm. So it was, for him, I think, it just felt like such a, like, yeah, a stab in the back that I would be the person to bring someone else to Jesus. Yeah. So he confronted me and asked me, is this true? And I said, yes. Mm. And actually, when you said, like, it felt like someone had died to me, there's so many things you said that really resonated with me, because he said, it feels like you've died. Mm. Like, to him, that was the death of Fadila, as he knew her.
Yeah.
And maybe it was, because I came to life in a different way.
Mm.
But
Yeah, so he actually gave me an ultimatum. And he said, okay, so he funded my life here right. in London. Mm-hmm. I was still in uni. I'm at the time, maybe 20, 21. Mm-hmm. And I've got no funding or anything mm-hmm. if not for him helping me be mm-hmm. here. And he said, okay, so it's me and all of the things I do for mm-hmm. you, or it's Jesus. And to this day, I cannot believe what I said, but I chose Jesus. Mm-hmm. And I said, I choose Jesus. And he said, cool. And from that day, he stopped helping me.
Right. And what did that look like?
It looked like me having to move in with friends. Right. And
Financially,
he was helping me be mm-hmm. here for uni. So I had to move out, kind of pave my own way, figure out how I was going to pay for uni. Mm. Just everything that I knew and the comforts that I had and the privilege that I had actually was taken away from me. Mm-hmm. And I remember at the time, I'd kind of just started reading the Bible and like learning about God more and really digging deep. And I remember, I think there was a scripture that says like, and obviously there's people that are persecuted way more than I was, but it says, blessed are the persecuted for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Mm. And that just clung onto me. That was it for me. I was like, do you know what? Like, I really, truly believe, God, that you've got me and that somehow, some way, we're going to get through this. Mm. And if you've brought me this far, you're not going to leave me here. Mm. So that just kind of started the deterioration of mine and my dad's relationship to the point where, it took so many years for anything to seem like it was going to change mm-hmm. when it came to mm-hmm. our relationship. He said, no one will ever marry you. He said, your life is over. Like there were so many things that were like thrown at me and so much, you know, like verbal abuse that I had to kind of go, no, I reject all of that. That's mm-hmm. not who I am. That's mm-hmm. not my future.
Well, did either of you ever just feel like, obviously you both came to faith in quite an incredible way. Like it was overwhelming. It was almost like you weren't even massively looking for that, but you found God in the middle of it. Did you ever, like when these things were happening, certainly between your parents and your dad, think, is this actually worth it? Is this worth losing my family over? Were there times, like maybe not initially, but over time where you feel the impact of your family treating you as though you've died?
Yeah.
Did you ever just think the cost is too big kind of thing?
Do you know what? I look back at my situation and I think, who was that brave girl? That, you know what I mean? Like you do, you look back and you're like, who do you think you are? Kind of like really, because your question, I've fully lost it.
Yeah, no, it's just like, was the cost too great? Do you ever look back and just go, did you ever just think, hang on a minute, that was all great. And like you saying it like in a moment of bravery, but beyond that, this actually has a real cost to me, not just the finances, but the cost of the relationship with dad, even though that wasn't your choice.
Yeah. Do you know, I just always had this belief that I cannot believe I had that restoration is going to happen. Like I just knew that that was going to be something, and maybe it was naivety, to be honest, and just me being in my whirlwind of being saved. And but actually, I really did believe that restoration would happen, and I had such incredible mentors and leaders and people that God surrounded me with that kind of just helped me hold on to that promise. So how about you?
And what were some of the emotions as well? It'd be good to hear, like, because you said after that like really terrible day and you ran away, lots more things happened beyond that. You were still so young, right? You were a university graduate. Like,
yes, I was about
21, 20, 22.
20 years old, similar to you, I also had great faith that we would be restored.
Yeah.
How it happened and how I thought it would happen, how I thought it would look was, I did not expect it to take as long. When it comes to the question of the cost, massive, massive loss. I have felt the weight of the loss. But I would never... The question has not been so much, was it worth it? I've never asked that because for me it's yes.
Yeah.
Sometimes I wonder, can I, if I was to be put through that again, can
would
I do
the same thing again? Yeah, that's
you're not
the question.
Sure.
Yeah.
You know, do not wish that for anybody. Do not want to go through it ever again. Was Jesus worth the cost? Yes. I feel like you get to a point when you see the light, you can't go back to darkness.
Right.
It's like, I can't. Nothing can make me go back to how I was. I really do thank God for the work that he's done in me. And everything that I've been able to experience with him. And just the intimacy in his presence. I think for me, it's the presence of God. Like living a life without experiencing the presence of God, I would never wish that for anybody. Mm. So in that sense, yes, absolutely worth it. But could I go through it again? I don't know.
Yeah, because there's been a great personal cost to you both. Even like knowing that there's hope and there might be reconciliation, and we can hear about that as well. Yeah. But you said to her then, just the time, it didn't happen in the timing or the way that you hoped. So what was kind of the process from that? So from being disowned essentially to what was like the next few years like?
Yeah, so God was very kind in that, again, surrounded me with people that came and covered me. I had spiritual mentors, my pastors at the time. When I ran away, I moved in with the person who's now my sister-in-law. So she was my boyfriend's sister, Julie. She's amazing. She's my kid's second mom. Like, she took me in. And when I moved in with her, I knew that, again, I had nothing. Like, my parents were funding my life, funding university. So the timing was that I didn't have to pay for university anymore. And we did things slightly differently. I decided to tell them about my faith first, rather than bring in the next big bomb to them, which is introducing my husband to them. Right. He's not Muslim.
Okay.
He's not like black Arab. He's just black. And that's a whole different conversation on race. And that's complex. But I didn't want to introduce him because I didn't want them to think that he made me convert.
Right. Right.
Yeah. I was like,
aim their anger at him.
Yeah. I was like, I'm not going to set him up for that. So, so it was a very long and hard journey. A lot of, verbal abuse, or emotional, like, you have ruined our lives. The shame that we feel. And I think for them, it was true. It was my decision. And in a way, it wasn't fair for them because I made a decision that impacted their life. And it did bring a lot of shame to them. But it's because of the context and the culture we live in. So it was really, really hard for both my parents, for my whole family. It was a disaster. So I moved in. I remember... there was a wonderful man in our church who like became like a father figure, who's Uncle Richard. And he heard about what happened, and he also was persecuted when he was young for his faith. And so he understood the cause. So he came and just to make sure that I was okay. And before he left, he pulled out a 50-pound note and gave it to me. And I don't know what it is about that, but like when he gave me that 50-pound note, I just broke down because my mom like, 50 pounds is all I have to my name. I can't spend it because I don't know where money's going to come from. But yeah, God was kind. Julie, my sister, then hooked me up with a job. So I started working in accounting. I'm like, it was just anything to make sure that, I was in a good, productive headspace. my family stopped speaking to me for several months. The only person who couldn't stop speaking to me at the time was my mother,
right.
because she's a mother.
Mm.
And although it was very toxic at the time,
mm.
but she was still checking on me to make sure mm. I was okay. And, you know, my father was in and out. Like, he had mm. moments when he would be a father, be like, how much are you making? You're making, how are you living on that? But it was on and off. And mm. then during that time, both my mother and sister had cancer mm. in the same year. Mm. And so God put it in a way, made a way for me to actually go. And I was the only person who didn't have kids from my siblings mm. Who could actually travel and look after them. So during that time, my mom came here to get treatment. So I was able to be mm. with her.
Amazing.
And that really helped create a bond. Like, I know I made this decision and you guys think that I don't care, because you have to also remember from their point of view,
mm.
I was the rebellious girl mm. that went drinking, that didn't care yeah. about them, self-centered, mm. baby of the family. Mm. And now you've gone and done this.
Mm.
So when I went to care for them, it kind of started to help break down that
mm.
slowly but surely.
The mindset. The mindset
that, yeah. Mm. And it just also gave an opportunity for them to see how following Jesus has changed me mm.
yeah.
and changed my life. And then I was also able to go and spend some time with my sister for 3 months and look after her, and she was in mm. the US. So we had conversations, I was able to explain, and like that helped build my relationship and start that mm. reconciliation journey. And what was hard is that everyone was somewhere different. Like my yeah. there's 7 of us as a family, mm. including my parents. I'm like, and I had to figure out
where people were.
And just because I had, mm. okay, a door was open with one relationship did mm. not mean it was yeah. open with that yeah. one. And so I kind of had to explain myself in different mm. ways. I remember I would, just, whenever they would invite me, I would go and mm. travel. And, but my dad struggled. So he was in and out. He'll speak to me sometimes. He wouldn't. Mm. And then when I flew back home, he had this conversation with me where just like your dad was like, okay, I think after he had some time to process what happened, mm. said, I need you to know if you're gonna be a Christian and make this decision, is like, I will accept you as my daughter, as a human being. But if you're going to be a Christian, just know that I will not marry you to a Christian man right. and you will not inherit anything from me. And right. I said, that's fair. Mm. That's fair. So after that, the on and off was the wedding and introducing my husband. That mm. was another, that was the cherry and the icing on mm. the cake that just... Mm. annihilated mm. whatever hope I had. I was so afraid and I was so traumatized by then of mm. telling them, because I've already thrown a big ball. I was like, God, mm. I'm not going to tell them. Please tell them for mm. me. I have no idea to this day how they found out.
Wow.
Right. Because
so you didn't tell them?
I did not tell them.
Wow.
And they're like all overseas. Mm. My sister calls and says, you're going out with Andrew, aren't you? Andrew's my husband. And I was like, yes. I am.
Who told you?
We want to get married.
Oh, okay.
And again, that whole conversation mm. Was a lot of pain. A lot of pain. So, and when it came to us actually getting married, we flew back home mm. with some of Andrew's family, and that went south.
Oh, you went back to...
Yeah, LA. Went to the... No, right. to the Emirates. Yeah,
right.
yeah,
right.
yeah. Went back to the Emirates with Andrew, some of his family.
Yeah.
And the way it ended was that they did not... They said, we're not going to agree to this marriage. And long story short, it was... I had to escape again. and this time I had to smuggle myself out and... escape the Emirates and catch a flight back in London, which is too long of a story to right. share here. Yeah, and so what ended up happening was on our actual wedding day, none of our parents could make it.
Mm.
None of our parents made it. And later on, they had their own different versions of our wedding. Like, we had to do a wedding for our community, a small little thing they did for them. And then we flew to Uganda and did a big wedding there where we celebrated the following year. And after that was the hard bit where it was just, I think after that, my parents didn't speak to me because they were so hurt. Pardon. And once that happened, I think it also coincided with, it was after me looking after my mom and my sister and their cancer. And so it softened my dad towards me where we actually had the conversation and he told me how I made him feel. And that was a really hard thing to sit down and listen, because he basically thought that I was, it was just an extension of my rebellious nature, that I did everything so that I could live a life of freedom and a promiscuous life here in London. That's who he thought I was. After that, the hope was that we would, my marriage to Andrew would somehow dissipate, fall apart, and I would just come to my senses. And that option was given to me. It's like, you know,
If you want to get out.
If you want to get out, like, we're not going to be mad about that. Even if you come back home, like, we can make things work, find someone else for you to marry. You know? Like, and I was like, not going to happen. What sealed the deal with my dad was the third blow for them was my first pregnancy, when they found out that I was pregnant. Because I think for him, he was like, once the children are involved, this is it. This commitment is for life. And so I didn't, after my daughter, my eldest daughter now is 11. So from the time she was born till reconciliation, I hadn't spoken to my dad in about 7-8 years. And on and off with everybody else. Everyone else was like in different places.
Well, Fadila, what about you? Because you're married now.
Yes.
So, and you were saying about giving your dad, you know, the gift, the second best gift you could give him. How did all that come about on the back of, obviously he's like not, wasn't financing uni, you'd had to move in with friends and all of that kind of thing. Were you speaking during that time? Was it kind of like he was keeping in touch with you, but not?
He would keep in touch every now and again to see how I was doing. And, you know, so many things you say resonate with me so much. You spoke about how there's like this misunderstanding of why you've chosen to be a Christian. It almost, and maybe it is cultural from where we're both from, that it you know, it kind of comes off like as, oh, you just want to, you want to just do what you want to do and you want to live this life that isn't, the way you don't have to abide by rules and regulations. So in every conversation that I had with my dad, that would always be brought up to me. Like, he would almost tell me who I was. And I'd be like, that is not who I, you have no idea who I am if you think I do those type of things. So I think him finding out that I was going to get married, he actually found out that I was going to get engaged before I did, because Ben called him. He had never spoken to him. He had never met him. But he wanted to do him the respect of calling him before he proposed to me. And so he got his number from my mum, and he called him, and supposedly dad said, Fadila's not really part of my, she's not really my responsibility anymore. If she decides that she wants to marry you, that's completely up to her. And just kind of kept it quite cold. And that was their only conversation. So we got engaged. I obviously did my dad the respect of telling him I'm engaged. I knew that Ben had spoken to him. And I really prayed. Like, I really believed that there was just going to be this like fairy tale reconciliation at the wedding where he would walk me down the aisle. And that was not it. He did not come to the wedding. And that was such a heartbreaking time for me, a decision that like actually has shadowed me for so many years. Just that feeling of rejection. And, you know, you dream, a lot of girls dream of their dads or their parents being there at their big day. And that, you know, that reality just wasn't my reality. And to the day that we were getting married, I just really believed.
Still hoped that he might just walk in.
I hoped that he would just turn up. And he didn't. Which was really, really hard. Really hard for me. So my mum walked me down the aisle, and which was so lovely. And there were so many incredible people at the wedding, and it was such a beautiful day. But the hurt, I remember coming back, and Ben and I actually went to like a retreat after. And there was just one day where I just broke down, like all the emotions that I'd clung, you know, all like the happiness of just being married, going on honeymoon, all those things had kind of gone away. And it was like, oh, wow, like the person that I wanted there the most didn't show up, didn't come. And it was just so heartbreaking. And I think after that, our relationship, like mine and my dad's relationship, just kept, it was like the closeness that I thought we would have with, oh, I've given him, like, you know, I'm married now. It was the complete opposite. Right. It was just like this fading away, where I would become more of what he thought I was, and making decisions. And obviously I married a Christian as well, which was not part of his plan for me. So yeah, it was just so hard to kind of deal with that rejection.
Did you, just practically, how did you begin after that initial time, obviously, where you really broke down, you realized I'm actually feeling this rejection now. Even just that Ben had called your dad and he basically said, yeah, she's just not really anything to do with me anymore, is like, okay. How did you begin to deal with that practically?
Do you know, I actually only think I've really dealt with it recently.
Right.
Like, it's been years of hurt and forgiveness and figuring out how to forgive and what does forgiveness look like when it comes to my dad. And actually, when I had Nyla, who's our 2-year-old, when I found out that I was actually having a girl, I had to go to counselling. And the reason why was because I never wanted to bring a girl into this life to then be rejected by people around her. And it was just so, like, that hurt was so real to me. And I needed to process that and process why rejection and the fear that she would actually be rejected by my dad was such a huge thing for me. So I actually, my therapist at the time, she said to me how, okay, like, if you were to have a conversation with your dad about this, how would you talk, like, how would you, you know, explain?
How would you approach it?
And we went through it and I had the conversation with him. I've kind of started and stopped because I've not spoken about how we actually reconciled. When it comes to my healing, that was what brought healing when, he was like, no, I actually do want to be in your daughter's life and I'm not going to reject her and I want to be consistent. And that was literally what brought the healing. I think before then, there was always this fear of, like, even when we did reconcile, which I can talk about, even when we did reconcile, I just felt like, oh no, tomorrow he's going to find out something else. And you know, it just always felt
like a false start. Type thing.
You're just always thinking, like, tomorrow he's going to change his mind, or he's going to think something, and or he's going to make an assumption, or an assumption of what Christianity is, and then reject me again. So there was always like this, like, hesitation to, like, to trust, and that I actually brought into all of my relationships. So yeah, I do genuinely feel like healing happened then when I took responsibility, I think, for my own trauma and got the help I needed.
And I think sometimes you're both parents, aren't you? It takes becoming a parent makes you reflect even more intensely on your own upbringing, your own childhood. And for you, obviously, it was laced with trauma for different reasons to face that. So How did the reconciliation happen then?
It's so funny because when I think back now, I'm like, oh, that is so random. So Ben and I had been married for 3 years. And we've now been married almost eight. We've been married 3 years. And there was one January that I decided, I always kind of, you know, we make our resolutions and we do whatever. But I'd gone, okay, I'm actually really going to pray and fast, actually, for my relationship with my dad to be reconciled. Like, that is what I'm going to focus on. That is what I'm going to believe in. Like, that's what I'm going to believe for. Mm. And Ben and I both did the Daniel fast and starved. I'm joking. and we did the Daniel fast and we just, like, we're like, but we were just really believing for it. Mm. And I want to say, gosh, like, maybe 14 days into the fast, my dad called me and he said, oh, I'd really like to meet Ben. And so he'd not met Ben.
Right.
We're married 3 years. Mm. He goes, I'd really like to meet Ben and I'd love to come and see your home. And I'm like,
where did this come from?
I'm like, I'm not sure I wanted it this soon. Right. Maybe call me back in a few years, you know? So I was like, okay, sure. And Ben and I had like this pep talk of like, you know what, he's stepping into our home. Mm. We're not going to hide any Bibles. Mm. We're not going to hide anything about our Christianity. We're going to be ourselves. We're going to, you know, be true to ourselves. And he came and he kind of just fell in love with Ben.
Really?
They just got on so well and he just warmed to us. And I think maybe any like assumptions or any like pictures that he'd like hidden of like Fadila and Ben are just like wild, living this wild life, just was completely, we're the complete opposite of that. Like, right. Ben and I are at home drinking tea. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think for him, seeing our lives and going, oh, wow, like they're making really wise decisions. They're, you know, really flourishing in their lives. And even Sahar, what you were saying as well, when you were helping your mum and your sister, and they see character changing, like they see Jesus in action. They see, you know, you being kind of living through rules and regulations into, I have this relationship with God that gives me rest and it gives me peace and it gives me grace and it gives me forgiveness. So I think them seeing that was really attractive to them. And since then, we've actually just kept rebuilding.
Really?
And until I was pregnant and I had to kind of really deal with that trauma, that was the first time that I actually went like, look, Dad, this is how it actually made me feel. When you didn't come to our wedding, the rejection I felt, the, you know, the trauma I still have, the shadow that still visits all of my relationships because of this rejection, I cannot have my little girl deal with that. Like, that's not the life that she's going to live. So you need to make a decision. Are you going to be in her life and in it, or are you not? So honestly, it was like, there is no way that that happened other than God.
Right.
No other way.
And what about you, Sahar? Like, just, were you reconciled with your family, or is that like an ongoing, journey?
It's been a very slow ongoing journey, but reconciled with mom and dad in the end. They've both passed away, which was a really beautiful thing. But I'm also like, I'm just amazed by how there's so many similarities about like the trauma of the wedding. And I, to this day, have not watched the wedding video.
Wow.
And on the wedding day, I just felt numb, I think because it was at the height of the trauma. And then also, I had that day where I broke down, but it was a year later when we had the wedding in Uganda done by Andrew's family. The second, we woke up in the morning, I was getting ready and I was very snappy. And my sister Judah was like, I know today is the day. She's like, we're not going to fight today. She's like, she's sitting, and I'm just being short and snappy. And as she's helping me put on the dress, that was it. I snapped, as in like I broke, and I think I probably cried, like as in eyes swollen, like like for a good hour. And everyone was like,
do you want to go ahead with this?
And it's like people were calling people at the venue. The bride is having a breakdown. We're not sure. Just give us a few minutes. And they're like, what happened? Yeah. And at the time, I didn't have language to say trauma. Like, I'm freaking out. But putting on the dress again, I was just like, I do not want to put on this dress. like, why am I being put through this again? Mm. But I mean, it was like the most fun wedding we had after, like, I had my mini breakdown. And I'm very grateful that Andrew's family did it for us. But yeah, so reconciliation did come. And sadly, my mom was then diagnosed with cancer again. Like, the cancer metastasized, she got it back, and we knew, like, okay, we're on borrowed time now. Mm-hmm. And it was my dad who called me, and he was like, your mom has cancer, can you come? And I said, okay, can I bring the kids and Andrew and stay with you guys? And he said, you can come.
Wow. Had they met your children at this point?
Hadn't met my kids.
Wow.
So my mom and some of my siblings met my children. My dad never did. And so we fly out there, and the way it worked was, by the time we arrived, it was like in the middle of the night. So my parents were sleeping. It was like other family that opened the door for us. So we all like crashed and slept. And then we wake up in the morning, and me and Andrew are like, obviously, like, we're in my parents' house. Like, I'm tense as heck, you know, and we're like, okay, I need to wake up and get the kids ready and make sure we're all presentable and present them. These are the children, you know. And we woke up, and the kids, of course, did what they did. They were super excited. They woke up super early, running around the house. And so I wake up to find, like, okay, like, I need to sort them out. I find my father and my third-born son having breakfast together. He was like in his nappy, sitting on his lap, and my dad was giving him breakfast, and my dad was beaming, and he had the biggest smile on his face. And all my dad kept saying when he saw the children was like, I'm so happy. I'm so happy to see them. And then he saw Andrew, and he stood up and embraced him, and he said, you're a good man.
Wow.
And my mother just thanked him, and she was like, we love you so much. Like, we really love you. And that was it. Like, from that moment, like, you know, our relationship, obviously, unfortunately, because they were in their older age.
Yeah.
And I think that was something I really grieved and I had to process with God. Like, Lord, I feel like I couldn't, and that's something that really hurt. It's like, I wanted to be there for my parents in the older age. I didn't want to give them grief and pain so late in their life. But I know the reason why my dad actually didn't speak to me wasn't because he didn't want to meet the children, is because I know he loves children so much. And he knew that if he saw them, that he would melt. But he took that position, and that's why I don't blame him. And that kind of plays into why it was so easy for me to forgive and not hold that grudge, is because he's practicing his faith. Because he fears God. And he's like, if this is what God is asking me to do, then I'll do it, even if it hurts. And I'm on the other side.
You can relate to that.
And I could relate, because I'm in a similar position where I'm like, I'm going to pull away from you guys and do something that's really hurtful to you. But Jesus is calling me. So we were almost like at a stalemate.
Yeah. There is that empathy that comes with it, isn't it? Like, especially when you start, you know, having kids or being in relationships where you can't control other people.
Yeah.
Like, we cannot control other humans. And I'm learning that if Nyla just, like, we're going to try as much as we can to teach Nyla in the ways that she should go, or how to live her life in the best way that we feel.
She's her own person.
She's her own person. Yeah. I cannot control what she does. And actually, could I say that if she did something that was so hurtful to Ben and I, that I wouldn't, in my human like nature, just feel so mad at her. And so, you know, there's this empathy that comes with actually going, I kind of get it. Like, yes, I think we went a bit overboard. But I understand like that feeling of, and that's the difference between you know, humans and Jesus, and when he speaks about, you know, the prodigal son, and the father embraces the long lost son, we can't help ourselves but to go, you need to learn and you need to, you know, teach me that you've changed and show me that you've changed and show so.
But I think also empathy comes when you become a parent.
Yes.
Because the second you become a parent, you realize very quickly how flawed you are.
And how hard it is.
Like, and a part of me, so much of my parenting now is like, I'm like, Baba Mama, I'm so sorry. I was such a jerk. I get it now. I hope you can hear me. Yeah. You know? Like, I get it. Yeah. You know, it's hard. And they did the best with what they had. Yeah. And I know for a fact that although there was a lot of pain and, like you're saying, we went overboard, it was all done from a place of love.
Yeah.
And they did the best they could. And
with what they knew and their culture.
Exactly. Yes. Within the culture, within the boundaries of the culture and what allowed them. And part of my healing was very similar to you as well. A lot of the processing and healing is happening now.
Yeah.
Like, I'm in therapy and I'm unpacking so much. And it's been so, so helpful for me because there's a lot of internalized trauma that comes out sideways. Yeah. That you're not aware of.
Oh, 100%.
Mm. And when you're a parent, and a huge part of why I'm doing therapy, yes, it's for me, but it's also as I'm getting healing and sharing with my husband and some of my older children that can understand, it's healing them as well.
Yes, yeah.
And they get to hear that, like, it's important for them to know that your grandparents loved you. They couldn't, you know, they had a different faith and I had to explain to them and the children as well. It's like, Mom, your life is wild. like, I know, I've calmed down now. You know, but so the healing is still happening.
Thank you so much, both of you, for sharing your stories.
Thank you.
I mean, it's powerful, it's sad, but there's so much joy in there as well. And Sharon's stories of forgiveness, I'm sure they've not been linear or straightforward. Yeah. I'm not saying they're completely complete, but just you can hear just even in the way that you speak about your parents now that there's so much honour and respect there, even though that's not always been joyful times. Yeah. We've got an audience dilemma. So Magnify Community have been writing in, sending different things in on these kinds of topics. So I'll read it to you and you can both just say what you think. So it says this: I've been on a long journey with my family after I became a Christian. I found my own faith because of my partner, and I will forever be thankful to him for leading me to God. I always knew my family wouldn't react well when I told them because of their culture and their own beliefs, but I still told them anyway. At the time, they made it clear they didn't want much to do with me if that's the path I had chosen. The pain of their decision ran deep for a long time, I assume, for the person who sent it in. And it had a huge impact, not just on me, but on the relationship I had with my partner too. And it took a lot of work for us to recover from it. So it's been 5 years now. I'm happily married, but I've been praying every day for a reconciliation and for God to be working in my family's lives to come around to my decision. A couple of months ago now, my dad reached out to me in the hope of rebuilding a relationship. It's something I thought I would be ready for, but now facing it, I'm finding forgiveness actually a hard thing to do. Mm. It's hard to forget the pain that's been caused, but also I want to be able to move on. So have you got any tips for forgiveness in that kind of a situation? It sounds kind of similar to your story.
Do you know what? One thing, I remember reading a book on forgiveness, and forgiveness is not about forgetting. Forgiveness is not about forgetting. Forgiveness is actually for you. It's for your heart. And it's like, I don't know who says it, like, when you do not forgive, it's like you're drinking poison thinking that the other person is going to suffer. And so for me, and as we've both shared, we've both gone to therapy. We've both had to kind of process, because I think for me anyway, forgiveness was processing my hurt. It actually had nothing to do with my dad. It had to do with actually going through my stuff and going, okay, how do I deal with this stuff? I'm not going to forget it, but how do I actually make peace with it?
Yeah, really helpful.
So good.
So how, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think the other thing I would add there was learning how to have boundaries as well. In our culture, well, I think it's similar for you, but let me speak for myself and not assume, but boundaries are not a thing. Like, open door policy, homes, your cousins will come and wear your clothes. Like, boundaries are not a thing in cultures that are very, like, have strong-knit families and communities. Mm. So I feel like forgiveness really ties in very well with that because sometimes, for example, with your parents or with this individual's father, you might need to sit down and actually take stock of where people are emotionally. Mm. And for the sake of your heart and your well-being, you need to move them. Mm. And that's something that I had to do because my parents had so much say and their words were powerful because they're my parents. But it got to a point where it was like, I cannot allow them to carry on. Every time I have a conversation, it's taking me 2-3 weeks, months to recover. So it's actually not good for my well-being. So I need to remove them from the place that I've put them in my heart. You can still honor and love people, but also create a sense of distance and have boundaries.
Yeah.
So, and something that I learned, which was very helpful for therapy, is that make sure that you don't suppress and force yourself to do things that you're not able to do. Mm-hmm. So if you need to put a boundary down and you're not ready, that's okay. Does not mean that you're not loving. Does not mean that you haven't forgiven. Mm. But trust takes time to build and people need to earn your trust. Mm-hmm. And so just not to conflate the two.
Yes.
You can forgive, create boundaries, allow people to earn your trust again.
Yeah.
There's this analogy that I think actually might be really helpful for what you said about like having a drawbridge for your life. So say you and your family are on an island with your, I don't know, with your butter and whatever else.
The hair
on the island. The
and a bike.
And the bike. And we're all on, and you're on the island and there's a drawbridge and everyone else is on the other side. Mm. And you decide when you put that drawbridge. Mm. Not everyone can come into the island when they want to, how they want to, with their opinions and their whatever and their energy or whatever you want to call it. You decide when you bring down that drawbridge and what you allow onto your island.
So good.
Yeah.
So good.
So helpful. Thank you so much for all your wisdom as well. Lastly, it would be great. As the Magnify community, we love to know how we can support other women in our community, of which you both are. So can you just tell us like where we can find you online or anything that you're doing at the minute that you want to tell us about?
Yeah, sure. You can find me on Instagram and YouTube as well as Sahar Twesijay. I have a podcast called Daring Forward. Mm. We're going to launch the next season at some point soon, hopefully this year. And so you can go check me out there. I also help entrepreneurs. If you're a small business owner or an entrepreneur, if you want to learn how to grow your business with Pinterest and Pinterest marketing, I'm your chick. And what else? And also, this year, something that I've been doing that's been really, really fun is coaching. Mm. So if you want to start an online business and you're not sure how to go about it and you're starting out, feel free to hit me up. I would love to connect with you.
Yeah. Amazing.
Very cool.
Amazing.
And yeah, you can find me on social media, on Instagram at Who Is Fadila, and also Hail Sound Management, which is Hail Sound MGT, which is where we kind of do all of our branding and music stuff on there. I've actually just qualified as an executive coach as well.
Incredible.
Thank you. So I am open to coaching. My passion is for artists and creatives and people that are trying to stay true to themselves in the creative industry. Mm. So if anyone would like some coaching, I'm your gal.
Thank you so much, ladies. This has been, thanks for sharing your story. It's been really powerful and I know it will impact lots of people as well.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us for this week's episode of the Magnify Conversations. We hope you've enjoyed it and found it really value adding. If you're new to our community or perhaps you just joined us for the first time today, we have an Instagram. Our handle is at Magnify Collective. You'll be able to find everything you need there to keep up to date with us. Next up, if you have a story that you would like to share on the Magnify Conversations, you can go on our website, magnificollective.com, and share your story with us. We really look forward to seeing you for next week's episode on Monday.